Blog Talk Radio.
Well, good morning, everybody, and welcome to our show. I'd like to introduce Mr. Richard Race. He is the CEO of a leading MSP firm, Race Computer Services, based out of New Jersey and New York City. Rich, let's go ahead and get started, please.
Oh, yeah, sure. All right, so I guess I'll just go over a little bit about the business that I'm running here.
Tell us about Race Computer Services. Tell us about your background, how you got started, where you're at today with your company, and we'll segue then into the.
Yeah, actually, I was just gonna get started with that actually myself. So, actually, I'm originally from Rochester, New York. I started my career in computer repair. I ended up getting a contractor type position when I was in college, supporting Dell computers in warranty repair, and I had a pretty interesting opportunity to get into doing some traveling to different areas and running service calls across the Northeast, replacing computer parts. Originally for a while, that was pretty good for the time. I was 21 years old, and I'd bring in between $700 and maybe $1,100 a week, but I had to do a lot of driving and traveling, so there was a little bit of expense associated with that. And then I stumbled upon New Jersey on one of these, travel opportunities, and I realized that it was really busy out there. So what I ended up doing was I had them place me into that territory as more of a permanent repair person. I decided to wing it and move out to Jersey. I mean, it really wasn't that far from where I was originally from, and if it didn't work out, I could pretty much always go back anyway. So long story short, over a couple of years, the repair volume started to die down, and I needed to, quickly supplement the service call income with other things. So I started signing up for, some other services, like OnForce was one of them, Field Nation was one of them. I would just, network. I got a little bit into doing web marketing, and I would get a few leads here and there. And, primarily, we went into a few different areas of tech, and we started doing network consulting on an hourly basis, and we did a little bit of even TV repair. I had a little computer repair shop opened up for a while, and I mean that would be I was doing better with that than I was with the Dell stuff, but I would still have these periods of time where the income wasn't really that good. So I started doing a lot of research on business, and I started to learn that we could sell these on, more of a a service contract for small businesses. So we went into doing that, started trying to build up the recurring revenue, but things as far as the recurring revenue were pretty slow at building, because we noticed that there was a lot of client retention for signing on monthly deals. So let's say between maybe 2015 and now, so that's over the last 6 years or so, I actually ended up working for another MSP as a salesperson, and then I worked there for approximately a year, came out, restarted everything from the ground up, doing the managed services with a new marketing process that I pretty much designed myself, which is location-based SEO, where I have specific services that are targeted towards different locations. And I've noticed that, you know, this has enabled us to really get some of the lead flow coming in that we need and, you know, some of the exposure that we need, you know, to bring in new tech support and managed service clients. And, you know, along with that, we've built relationships with several other companies that allow us to deliver and distribute cybersecurity services, which would be like penetration testing, vulnerability assessment, you know, cybersecurity analysis, that type of service, which is mainly geared towards more enterprise-level clients, but we can also resell that to SMB markets, small, medium-sized business as well. And then additionally, cloud has also become a pretty big thing with, you know, especially with the COVID now. So we have another consultant that, that deals with, you know, like Microsoft Azure deployments and AWS and, you know, things of that nature. And, you know, we use him on some of our managed clients, or we may just use him on a project as well. So the other thing that I do is I also do marketing for them, and then they refer us in deals when they get deals that we can help them with as well. So it kind of, you know, the digital marketing really helps me, and it also helps, you know, the other companies that I'm also working with to, you know, to get that exposure and, you know, get into the doors of some other businesses, either, you know, here in New Jersey or even, you know, possibly in other locations. And, you know, that's, you know, part of my plan moving forward is to, you know, target more metropolitan areas, you know, bring in these leads and then, you know, divide the services up with some of these other small tech companies, you know, depending on, you know, if they need cybersecurity or if they need cloud, or, you know, if they just need an ongoing managed solution, you know, we're there to provide them the, you know, we provide enterprise-level antivirus combined with, in most cases, unlimited remote support. Most of our clients have a lowered project rate and a flat fee for on-site services just in case, you know, just in case they need to have a tech come in for something that can't be fixed remotely. So that gives us a pretty strategic way of, you know, dealing with the clients that we're getting. And it also helps us help them in a fashion that makes business sense, because our solution is cost effective and we're pretty reliable as well.
Okay, excellent.
So yeah, that's you know, that's a little bit of a brief, I guess you could say, on what it is that we're doing.
Excellent. Now, I know that you're deep into cyber, but there's another interest you have that we've been talking about, and that's the crypto markets. So,
oh yeah.
Tell us how you got ventured into that, and you got the whole podcast.
Oh yeah.
The whole thing. We've got a whole slew of subtopics on this one here.
Oh yeah.
Yeah,
I mean, yeah, there's definitely, you know, there's definitely a lot more information, and it's definitely a very exciting topic. So basically, you know, I've always been interested in cryptocurrency, you know, ever since I first heard about Bitcoin. However, I was always apprehensive about putting money into it because of, you know, the large volatility. And not only that, I mean, you have, you know, several large-scale investors have always said horrible things about crypto, and that's been a thing up until probably as of maybe middle of last year. You started to hear a little bit more good things about crypto. But how we ended up getting involved in cryptocurrency was a client had called in last year due to some of the advertising that we did, which was specifically targeted towards Linux and Unix services. And this was a San Diego-based client. So he did some research and, you know, found one of our pages since we rank pretty well for Linux and Unix support in San Diego. He called in and, you know, he had a few questions and he was basically like, well, I'm looking for someone to set up a Unix node for us. Is that something that you could do? And I was like, yeah, that sounds like something that we could do, but, you know, let me gather the details of what you're trying to do. I'll, you know, have a quick discussion with our tech, and then I'll get back to you, and, you know, we could touch base and determine how it is that we could help you. So now, at first, I was basically just gearing towards, you know, helping this guy. I didn't even initially know that it was a crypto node he was trying to set up. But come to find out, the prospect was trying to set up a blockchain validation node, which is a computer server that process and validates transactions on a blockchain network. And this cryptocurrency happened to be something called Switchio, which I had never heard of it before. I'm like, Switchio, what the heck is that? And then, you know, I kind of, you know, went to him to gather information. Well, what's this? What's that? And, you know, we sold them, you know, basic project support and, you know, 10-hour time blocks that, you know, somewhere around $115 an hour. So he would pay us about somewhere around $1,000, and then we would do 10 hours of work. We'd give him, like, a couple hours extra. But, yeah, we were able to get the node up and going, and I, you know, got into talking with him. And, you know, apparently he had invested into this cryptocurrency, and it had done more than 10x since he initially invested into it. I guess he got into it in kind of like a seed round, and he's like, well, this is an exchange token, and, you know, this thing has so much potential. And, you know, a lot of this was basically just going over my head at the time, but I was like, all right, well, let me take a look at this. I'll do a little bit of research on it. And, you know, I was like, all right, well, let's say I wanted to buy a couple bucks of this coin just to see how it works and what it does. And I was like, all right, well, let me just throw like $300 at it. I mean, I just made like $2,500. Let me just put a couple bucks back into it. So I'm like, how can I buy this? And he's like, well, I don't know how you could buy it. And I was like, really? So I started to do all this research, and I figured out that in order to get this token, you had to buy Bitcoin somehow or buy Ethereum somehow on a centralized exchange and then convert it into another token, move it to another exchange, and then buy Switchio with it. I think what I figured out was you could buy – I think the easiest way to do it was to buy Ethereum from Coinbase, but the thing was you couldn't really get it very easily, because if you buy any type of cryptocurrency asset on Coinbase, they – like if you're a new customer, they lock the cryptocurrency for a certain number of days before you can even send it off the exchange. So it took me like, I think it must have taken me like a week and a half even to get that Switchio. And I was like, okay, well, during that time, I was like, well, you know what? There's also this Ethereum, and I was holding this Ethereum. And I think in that time frame, the Ethereum went from like $500 to like $700, and then it went back down to like $6. And I just started to watch this as this Ethereum, and I was like, well, wait a minute, this thing looks like it has some significant potential with what this is really doing. So what I started to do was I started to do a little bit more research on what this Ethereum was and what it was doing. And come to find out, you know, what I figured out was that Ethereum was basically – so I guess you could say the first significant competitor to Bitcoin, but what it is doing is it's enabling a smart contract platform that enables other companies or other people to develop crypto tokens on its network. So it's kind of taking it from, you know, just a cryptocurrency to more of a platform. And then I did a little bit of research, and I was like, well, you know, where is this really going, and how does it really perform in comparison to Bitcoin? And what I was looking at was every single year that you were to sit here and compare the performance of Ethereum to the performance of Bitcoin, the performance of Ethereum was significantly higher. So then what I started to do was I started to, you know, basically look at the past trend and the previous all-time highs of that. So I was like, you know what, this Switchio, I was looking at it, I'm like, okay, you know what, I'll buy some of it, but after hearing a lot about it, I realized that this Switchio is a little bit more, or probably even a lot more, in terms of volatility than Ethereum. And Ethereum was actually a pretty safer bet because of, you know, several different reasons. So what I ended up doing was saying, okay, well, and now this is as of last December, I was like, you know, December of 2020, where the price of Ethereum was somewhere around $550, and if I'm not mistaken, I think Bitcoin was like somewhere around $30,000 in December of 2020. It looks like it might have actually been a little bit less than that. I was right. So it was, apparently it made it up to 31 in December of 2020, and it went from 18,000 in October to 31,000 in December of 2020, and that's Bitcoin. So what I figured was the previous all-time high for Bitcoin several years ago, before it crashed pretty drastically, was about $20,000. And the previous high for Ethereum was about $1,400. So Bitcoin had already surpassed its original all-time high of 2017 by 1.5. And Ethereum was only one-third of where it was. So I was like, okay, well, this Ethereum seems as if it's probably significantly more valuable than what it's being priced at right now based on the information that I'm seeing. So I went pretty crazy with it and put I put about $65,000 into Ethereum.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it took me like nearly a month of making these little deposits and putting this amount in here, this amount in there. But I think what happened was I ended up going from about that. It went from, I was investing between about $550 and like $800, and it started to quickly move upwards towards $1,000 and more. And I think in like maybe mid-January, it might have been somewhere around $1,500, if I'm not mistaken. It was definitely somewhere in there, but it had a lot of ups and downs. So basically, I was able to pretty much do a pretty quick 3x on that amount, and I had made it upwards to somewhere around the $200,000 mark of Ethereum from that. And then what I started to do was more research on what this does and what else I could do with it. And, you know, being that I had this computer repair background, I started to say, okay, well, you know, maybe, you know, what if this crashes, or what if the value of the coins go down, what would happen? So I said, okay, well, if I mine it, which I was doing some research, not only I don't have to wait on the price to go up, I can make more tokens. So what I started to do was, you know, to put a few systems together and You know, I started buying a few mining rigs and, you know, a few different computers. So I started to buy a couple Alienware computers that had like 3090s in them, which have been the top of the line video card. I think they even still are. And, you know, I would basically just make an evaluation of the electrical consumption, the cost of the card, the hash power, and what the output of the hash power really is in terms of how many coins it could mine. And then I started to realize, well, you know, and you know, the funny thing is that I have researched this stuff before. And previously, when I had looked into it, I realized that after you pay electric, it's not really going to make anything. But over this last market shift, Ethereum had actually become pretty profitable, depending on if you can get the right video cards at the right price. So I started to look heavily for these video cards, and I ended up finding a few systems on eBay and a few on Craigslist, and I actually found three that were RX 580 based at a price of $9,000, and that was in Texas. And then I found another that was several rigs at about $4,000 a piece, and that was in Michigan. And that was, you know, and I had drawn out the hash rates, the electrical consumption, the possible profitability, the likely possible profit, the return level. Everything all worked out to the point where, worst case scenario, aside from a complete market crash, it looked like it was most likely probable to make the money back in 6 months or less. So I decided to go with it. I called up, made verbal agreements, made an eBay agreement with the other guy. So I ended up taking a flight to Texas. I ended up renting a large minivan from Enterprise in Texas, picked up three rigs. Now, each rig has approximately nine video cards on it. It has those rigs had two power supplies apiece, and it had one of those like storage carts, like the metal ones that, you know, that was basically just housing the rigs. The guy threw in a couple monitors and keyboards. So I packed that up into the van, and then I paid him the $9,000. I drove from there to Michigan. So I went from you know, sunny, nice weather in Texas, up to like, you know, nearly 0 degrees in Michigan, snow-covered roads. And, you know, I picked up another three rigs there that were running on water-cooled 1080 Ti's after figuring out that they had, you know, a pretty good ability on hash rate. I believe that they were the top of the line mining card in like 2018 or maybe, I don't know if they were 2017, that might have been before them. So I picked them up, and then I, you know, I had a full van of nearly $25,000 worth of computer equipment at that time. And then I decided to, you know, I brought it back to New Jersey, you know, started setting up. I set up all these computer systems. And what happened was they blew out the electric on my house. So I divided them because my house is a four-family house, and it has electric coming into each side. So I'm like, okay, well, we'll put half the systems on this side and half the systems on this side. And it turns out that I couldn't run all the systems on both sides of the house because the power draw was too much. So I had to hire an electrician to come in, pull a permit, run thicker cables to one side to support the electric that this thing took. So I did all of that, and then, after I did that, it was fine. Then I noticed that it was getting hot because these video cards started producing a lot of heat. So I had to buy a $2,000 AC unit. I believe it's about 36,000 BTU to help cool it. I had to start doing ventilation to exhaust all the hot air out. And, you know, like around that time, you know, by the time I was doing that, this thing was, I was able to make it up to from about $250 a day in Ethereum to around that time, I believe it made it up to 475, and then it would go back down to like 220, and then it would come back up. So like depending on the network utilization for Ethereum and how many people are using it, how many transactions are occurring on the network. So we would do this, and you know, we would make about, you know, let's say average about $250 a day. So what I would do is I would start to, you know, continue to look for, you know, either more video cards or, you know, some more mining equipment. And I started to say, okay, well, you know what, this seems like it's a little bit easier than, you know, waiting for the value to go up, because if it crashes, I'm basically cashing out the Ethereum and you know, using it as cash to survive off of. So if it goes down in value, it's not really going to make that much of a difference. So then what I ended up doing was I started to build a little bit more of a position in Switchio as well. So I would take some of the mine tokens, some of the tokens that I had in Ethereum, and put that into Switchio, because the Switchio allows you to stake it, which I'm not going to say that you can't stake Ethereum, because you can, but there's not really any reasonably controlled amount or rate of return for Ethereum staking, and it didn't really make a lot of sense. But basically, if you stake the token, they pay you in rewards, and that basically is their fee to you for kind of using them as, you know, they're basically utilizing your liquidity as, you know, either it could be either for lending or for something else, or to lock up the money. They give you rewards. So the rewards on the Switchio token are approximately 40% APR. So if the token value doesn't go up, you're still making a fairly significant amount just on the tokens. So it almost brings the concept of like the whole mining thing into reality on this other network. So I realized that, you know what, you could, you know, you don't have to rely on the value of the coin. Well, when the value goes up, it's great, but it also helps you to, you know, weather out the storm when you're building more tokens, because you know what, your overall value goes down a day. Okay, well, you still, you know, if you have a significant amount in there, you're still going to end up making, you know, somewhere around $100 a day. You know, just on the mining, on the mining tokens. So, you know, so I had the, you know, the original income was the shooting up of the price, which kind of was a requirement in order for me to reinvest into the other areas. But then I wanted to diversify my, you know, my crypto assets to a point where I'm not relying just on the actual value of any token that I'm invested in. Well, I still, you know, hope that the overall value goes up. So, you know, sometimes I would, you know, study the moving average of one thing. You know, also another thing that you can do is follow the projects. If a project has big news, you could, you know, maybe you could invest and make a quick like 50% profit if you want to trade pairs. So that's something I participated in a little bit. And then I guess, you know, the other thing that I started to do was I started to get into these bots and, you know, programming these bots to make actual trades. So like right now I'm actually in the process of configuring a 3 commas bot that trades Bitcoin against a large number of pairs in small amounts, and then it just sells it when it reaches a specific profit as a variable to trigger the trade. And it seems like it's making you know, a pretty reasonable level of profit You know, sometimes I can make another $80 to $100 a day just off of the actual bot making trades. And, you know, it's a pretty interesting thing to do, you know, when the market is not really on an upswing. Like, you know, right now we're basically in, you know, we're basically in a bear market right now. So, the risk is always there. You know, also the volatility is always there. But the risk and the volatility also are important factors of the whole crypto market that enable those large, those large 3X, 5X, 10X, or even more, you know, on a specific trade that could happen, you know, based off of the news. So, you know, if you're involved, you kind of always have to stay up on, you know, the news. Like, you know, lately, you know, Elon Musk has been doing a number on Bitcoin and Dogecoin as well. I mean, I'm not really too much of a fan of Dogecoin myself, because it seems like it's, you know, it doesn't really have much in terms of a value proposition. But, you know, Elon Musk will make a tweet and, you know, Bitcoin can jump from 30K to 60, but then, you know, he can make another tweet that'll bring it right back down to that 30K mark. And that's, you know, what we've seen as of recently. I mean, luckily for me, I don't really hold a lot in Bitcoin. I mean, I kind of just hold enough of it to make basic trades with it. But, that's my method of doing it. But, I think as a newcomer, or for anyone who might be new, you know, in the entire crypto space, I always like to say, you know, based on any cryptocurrency, if you're not really too familiar with them, it's definitely hard to come up with a true valuation method. And, the main things that I like to look at would be, you know, if there's any way for you to determine value, you always want to look for value proposition. I would say in the case of Bitcoin, I don't think Bitcoin has a very strong value proposition. But if you look at that for Ethereum, I think the value proposition is a little bit more significant, because, you know, Ethereum is more of a platform that enables people to, utilize the network, make smart contracts, and, you know, interchange money, you know, pretty seamlessly. And it's not that Bitcoin can't interchange money, but Bitcoin doesn't enable other people to create tokens on its network. My belief is that, eventually I think we're going to see, Bitcoin overtaking it. Ethereum overtaking Bitcoin. And, it probably won't happen this year or next year, but in the long run, I think that's the direction that I believe that it's heading in. And the other thing is, you know, how well known the token is. So, you know, the two primary valuation characteristics to look at would be the value proposition of the particular token and how well known the token is. And in the case of Bitcoin, you have a token that is extremely well known. Not the strongest value proposition, but the reality of the situation is, you know, with all of that recognition, because it's been there for so long and it's trading so high, you know, people jump on the Bitcoin ship. They may not be really too concerned about, you know what, Ethereum may grow faster than it. But it doesn't really matter, because, you know, if people still keep buying into Bitcoin, the value of Bitcoin is also going to go up as well over time. So, you know, it probably will continue to go up, but, you know, the one thing is it's very, very difficult to say, what the value will go to. You know, some people think that it's going to go to, you know, you hear maybe 100K, 250, 500, a million. It really depends on who you ask. But, the long-term value definitely seems to be headed on an upward trend, and is, as time goes on, it seems to be accelerating, you know, a little bit more rapidly. And, like, you know, what we're seeing this year is definitely related to the impact of the coronavirus has had on, you know, our economy. The, you know, it might, like, sometimes you look at it and say, well, you know, this is going up by so much. Why is it going up by that much? Well, you know what? In reality, it's really not going up by as much as it looks like it is. It's just that the unit of measurement that we're using to evaluate the cryptocurrency on is the U.S. dollar, and that's losing value. So, I mean, if you were to take the value of the dollar last year and measure it to Ethereum now, you would see that Ethereum hasn't made as much as – it's definitely made money, but it's not made as much as if you were to compare it against last year's dollars, you know, what I'm, you know, what I'm trying to describe. And, you know what, it's I still think that it's going to, you know, not just Ethereum, but, you know, I still think that we're going to continue to see, you know, overall that trend is most likely going to maintain an upward position. It's just a matter of how rapidly it's going to take place, in my opinion, anyways.
Well, that's my next
question. That's...
No, go ahead.
Oh, yeah, go ahead.
Rich, my question is, okay, Bitcoin trading cryptos are not regulated by the feds, right? So I actually met my financial advisor a couple of weeks ago, and he told me kind of how to get started. Investing in cryptos is risky, but
yeah.
For an investor, how do they get started? If you can just give us a nuts and bolts of, like, investing 101 in the cryptos, how do you get started?
Yeah.
Obviously, there's no ETFs, there's no mutual fund. How do you get started?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, yeah, there's no, you know, there's no one-size-fits-all for something like this. And, I mean, you know, while I'm not a financial advisor, I mean, I probably know a little bit more about crypto than most people do. And I think what it really boils down to is that you have several different investment types to look into in the entire crypto space. And I would make many evaluations and, you know, think about how much you're willing to risk. That's definitely an important variable. And then the other thing is, don't look at necessarily just investing. I mean, you could also make an evaluation and say, okay, well, you know, what about the mining? You know, what about the staking? And you know what, when you take it and, you know, you can make, like, for example, I would say most people don't get started with altcoins because, you know, I kind of think that Bitcoin is the gateway drug here. You know, most people, when they get started with crypto, they go right to Bitcoin because it's the most widely available, the most widely known. And then, you know what, either they'll buy some of it and then they'll see it go down and then they'll sell out and get out of it. You have to be prepared that when you buy in, the price is going to go down. I mean, I've, you know, overall, I'm definitely ahead of what I started with, but you know what? The chances of you buying at an all-time low are extremely, extremely low or impossible. So if you do invest into a specific crypto, I kind of think my personal opinion is that Ethereum is a safe bet. It's been performing well against Bitcoin. Bitcoin's not necessarily a poor bet. I mean, I still do think that Bitcoin will go up. Again, I'm not a financial advisor, but I see Ethereum as a pretty low-level risk, and it's also attracting a lot of institutional investment. And like I said, it's also, Ethereum is also the gateway to decentralized finance and the whole altcoin marketplace, which gives you, you know, the ability to invest into, you know, other smaller coins. I mean, you know, now you might be able to get into other things with Bitcoin as, you know, the technology is increasing. But, I mean, like, let's say if you wanted to buy Switchio, you would probably have to buy Ethereum first. So being that, Ethereum is there, like, if someone wants to buy some of these altcoins, they need to invest into Ethereum first. You know, the other thing that I would look into for, you know, for investors are those other gems that have that value proposition that Ethereum has that are at a lower price point. Because Ethereum, while it is the first of its kind, because it's wildly different than Bitcoin, there's other projects in the space that have realistically a similar value proposition that Bitcoin has. However, they're just not widely known. And a few of those that I would say would be projects like Dot, projects like Solana, Chainlink might also be one of them. You know, and then there's also other coins that you could look into. And, you know, I would specifically look at them on a value proposition base. Like now they have, you know, some coins out there that have cloud file storage stored in the blockchain. So, you know, you can basically have a data center in a cryptocurrency, you know, where, you know, you have people that are storing actual space in the blockchain. So the blockchain is coming up with a lot of different use methods or use cases for it. And, you know, each one has a different value proposition. And, you know, that's the first thing that I would really look for, because, you know what, that gives you something more than just a speculative investment for investing into something because you're afraid that it's going to go up, or you're investing into Bitcoin because, you know, you're afraid of missing out on the quick jump to $500,000 because, you know, you have some hearsay that it's going to go up. You know, I would definitely look into the utility of what these things are really doing, you know, for the people that are actually investing into them as well. Because I think that basically lowers the level of risk. You know, the other things that you want to look into are, you know, the regulators. And, you know, are these coins really, you know, something that can be traded in the U.S. without much of a downfall? And that's going to also be on a coin-by-coin basis. I mean, you know, we've seen XRP, you know, towards, well, maybe the beginning of this year, took a massive hit because they had some, you know, regulatory issues that, you know, we haven't seen that type of interaction with Bitcoin, Ethereum, or, you know, many of the other tokens. So, you know, it's not saying that it can't happen, but, you know, like, you know, sometimes you have people that think that, you know, it's going to crash to zero. I mean, I don't think that's highly probable because, you know, ultimately, you know, while there are the negative impacts that, you know, blockchain technology or cryptocurrency can have for, you know, facilitating illegal activity that, you know, what makes it look bad, there's also a lot of value that it delivers by, you know, not just to store value, but by other things that it enables people to accomplish. And that's the value proposition with it. You know, and that's maybe where, like, you know, someone like myself would, you know, while I'm not a financial advisor, the reality of the situation is you need to evaluate that as well as the financial properties of what you're really getting involved with. And, you know, I would say to you know what, I mean, it really depends on the person. You know, your financial advisor could, you know, help direct, like, you know, how much you're willing to risk. And then, you know, if you study the coins and look at, you know, what their unique value proposition is, what do they offer for their holders, and then say, okay, well, you know, if you want to, you know, make an investment, don't go in thinking that you're going to get rich quick. You have to be in for the long haul, and you really have to be there to hold it out. And, you know, that's what any, you know, that's what any knowledgeable person in the crypto space or a financial advisor would speak of if, you know, they were going to, you know, provide some type of advice. But I would definitely look at both, you know, both sides of it.
So if I were to, so suppose, say, I go to my financial advisor and say, hey, I want to invest X amount in this. So it's not like a market timing thing. It's not like a day trading thing, right? So you're saying it's like a mutual fund or an ETF you want to buy and hold. Okay. Huh.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, and I mean the other thing that you could do is, you know, I tend to watch a lot of different videos that are both pro crypto and even the ones that are anti crypto. I collect a lot of information and evaluate it in as much specific detail and as much information as I can, and then I'll come to a determination of, okay, is this correct or is it wrong, or does it have bits and pieces of correct information and bits and pieces of incorrect information? So I think that's really the main thing. You really have to, you know, collect a lot of information and, you know, take information from different people who have, you know, been there, done that, as well as, you know, people that are more geared towards financial advice as well as not just the technology. You know, I tend to watch a lot of Michael Saylor, and you know, he's definitely a Bitcoin maximalist. I mean, his videos are all over YouTube. But I mean, that's just one. You know, that's just one name. You know, the other thing would be not to also downsize the other hidden risks of cryptocurrency, and you know, a lot of people go in thinking that the only risk is that the token price can go down. The reality of the situation is, you know, you have, you know, different websites, you have different platforms, you have different containers. So the first thing that you really need, if you're not on, you know, a simplified all-in-one crypto solution like Coinbase or eToro, or, you know, some of these other centralized exchanges, is you need to get a digital wallet that it is exactly what it says in its name. It is a wallet. You know, you want to make sure that you're using a secure wallet. You know, there's plenty of different ones out there. MetaMask is one of them. Coinbase has a wallet as well. And there's plenty more wallets out there that you can just store your crypto in. And they have the Ledger as well. The Ledger is also very safe. It's more of it's a hardware wallet that, you know, it saves your crypto in a fashion where a cyber attacker couldn't reach it in the event of, you know, someone collecting your information. You know, but the other thing is, you know, you have to be very aware of, you know, how to access your wallet, how to recover your wallet, like if your phone breaks. Because if you store your wallet on your phone and your phone breaks, you know, you might end up SOL if you didn't save your key properly. You know, that was one of the risks that I ran into, or that's actually something that I ran into. Luckily, I was able to find that key and recover that wallet, so I almost made that mistake. And then you also have transfers. I mean, if you make the transfer to the wrong address, or if you transfer a coin that doesn't belong in a wallet, you can end up losing money pretty quickly like that as well. So those are all, you know, those are all areas that you could potentially see a loss without even the value of the coin going down.
Well, do you think the day is going to come where a Bitcoin ETF or mutual fund, where it'd be deemed to be much safer and a more comfortable trading tool for the average investor?
Yeah, I do believe that that will eventually happen. I think, you know, and I'm not going to say this is exactly what it is that you're talking about, but I know that TD Ameritrade has a, you know, has some interaction with that looks like they're developing on right now, that they have, I'm not exactly sure what it is that they call. I don't know if it's, I think that they do allow people to, they allow people to engage in cryptocurrency futures. I don't really know too much about that, But I do see that as time goes on, these regulated, financial institutions will become more involved in Bitcoin. You know, probably first Bitcoin, that's what we're seeing. Second, Ethereum. And as they, as they start to invest more into it, they'll also simultaneously enable more options for, their customers as well. And you know what? You know, and that's the way to adoption right there, because, while decentralized finance is great, and you know what? People talk poorly of regulators in many different cases. You know, it's nice to know that, if you store your money in a bank and your bank gets hacked, your money is backed. You know, that's one of the failure points with crypto. So, as it becomes something that these institutions can interact with and hold without worrying about if the feds are going to come in and shut them down, you're going to start to see more of that adoption and more options as far as investments with these banks for crypto.
Okay. Rich, the term blockchain is used very synonymously with the Bitcoin, but the two are actually kind of different. Can you explain to our audience really what the blockchain is, please?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm not an actual expert on the exact definition of that, but with my limited understanding of what this, what this blockchain technology is, all cryptos need this, network of, computers to make these transactions. And it's built in a way that, data is transferred from, one computer, verified by another computer, sent to your wallet. And, these things are, what make up how this, cryptocurrency technology works as a whole. And I mean, it's not just really Bitcoin, because all cryptocurrencies rely on similar technology. Now, one, Ethereum was the first one that enabled smart contracts to exist on that blockchain technology, where it's more of a building, it's more of a building platform and container for, these other cryptos.
Okay. Now, can you go tell us, our audience, can you go through some of these major, virtual currencies? We got Bitcoins, altcoins. Ethereum, blah, blah, blah. Can you define the most popular ones or the most commonly used ones and kind of give a brief breakdown for audience to what one is?
Oh, okay, yeah. Okay, so, I'm going to rely on, I just pulled this up real briefly since I didn't have a complete memorization of what the top 10 cryptocurrencies are based on market cap. So right now we have Bitcoin at number one, market cap of $641 billion as of June 25th. Ethereum is number two. Then you have USDT, which that's classified as USD Tether, which is a stable coin. Its value is backed by the value of one U.S. dollar. And that is actually based, I believe that's based on the, the Ethereum blockchain, if I'm not mistaken. So it has, some of the same properties of Ethereum. And it looks like the fourth one is Binance Coin, and this is interesting because this is an exchange coin. And what we've noticed over the past year is this is, also extremely interesting. Binance, I believe, like last October was around $30 or $40, and it shot up in value from that range all the way up to, I believe it went over 500, and then it went back down to like somewhere around $300. So, basically they have, this token is growing in value, because so many people use Binance. It's basically the most widely used exchange I'm not sure if it's the most, but it's definitely one of the largest exchanges, and that gives it the ability to create value for its token. I don't hold any of it, so I don't know the exact fundamentals of the valuation of that token or what exactly is the driver values of the token value, but it's definitely related to the trading on its exchange for sure. After Binance, what do we have? We have Cardano. Now, Cardano is actually founded by one of the co-founders of Ethereum, and they split off, I believe it was in 2017, and from that time, Cardano ADA has went from 2 cents to, I think right now it's right around $1.40 or $1.50, which is ridiculous. It's not quite 100x, but I mean, if you were to put in, I guess if you were to put in about $10,000, you'd be sitting on 1.5 million right now if you would have invested into that one in 2017. And then you have Dogecoin. I'm going to actually go back to Cardano for a second. That one also has, like Ethereum, it has that smart contract platform, and it also offers decentralized applications as well. So that one has a very strong use case, and the cool thing about it is it's also from, Ethereum's one of the founders or co-founders of Ethereum, in which case this is a response to Ethereum, which means that it does most of what Ethereum can do, but plus it has, increased areas where it offers more value. I believe it transacts at a higher rate, so it's mainly targeted towards lowering the fees of transferring money, and then it also has the smart contracts and decentralized applications, which that area may grow in the future as decentralized finance grows.
Okay. Another question. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, and the last four would be Dogecoin, XRP, USDC, which is a USD stablecoin, Polkadot, and Uniswap. So those are the other ones right there.
My next question for you is, now you're not a tax professional, I don't think, but I've been reading headlines this year, that the IRS is really cracking down on, people who trade crypto, stuff, and that the income has to be taxable. How can you test this stuff? I mean, it's all virtual. I mean, seriously.
Okay. So, as far as
if you can't answer that, let me know. I mean, I was kind of curious.
I can answer that to a limited degree. And I mean, while some of these laws are subject to change, there's two variables. There's what, how people are supposed to be taxed according to the regulations and, how these taxings can be enforced. So right now, the main tax enforcement occurs through centralized exchanges like Coinbase, through exchanges like Binance US, which is different from Binance. It's a watered-down version of what, the regular Binance would offer through KYC. So when you go to register on Coinbase or another centralized exchange, you have to submit KYC to create an account, which means that they need your banking information, they need your ID, they need your social security number, your tax information, they need all of that. And what that does is that enables them to gather information on you, gather information on your trades, determine if you're profiting or not, and then it also you know, that enables the IRS to make a determination of, okay, well, is this person profiting? So, I mean, now there's like, you know, two sides of this. If you're cashing out U.S. dollars on a regular basis, you know, you probably are going to end up getting some type of tax form from Coinbase that says, okay, well, this person sent this much money from their Coinbase exchange to their bank account, and then that gives the IRS their ability to send you, like, you know, a tax form, or maybe they rely on you to send it. I don't know exactly how that process works, but I do know that, you know, that's the fundamental, you know, the fundamental, you know, taxation of, you know, how it can be enforced with this particular regulation. Now, I guess the other thing is, if, you know, if you're just, you know, from, and I'm not going to say this is 100% fact, but from the best of what I'm understanding, if you just invest into a crypto and hold it and it goes up in value, you don't have to pay anything until you transact it back into U.S. dollars, and then you pay taxes only on the portion that you exchange back into U.S. dollars. I'm not sure if it works in that exact same, but I think it has some similarity to that. I'm not really a complete tax expert. But for Coinbase Pro, there is an application that you can connect up to your Coinbase that will give you a determination of what your actual tax liability is on the basis of your cryptocurrency transactions.
Mm-hmm. Well, but there is a cost basis though when you sell and to take out the cash, right?
Yeah, I think so. I think there's you know, there's a couple different ones. There's a couple different applications that can plug into your API on Coinbase that will give you a report of what your taxable income is, if any. Now, the cool thing here is, like I told you, I made a pretty significant amount in Ethereum, and I connected up the app to my exchange, and since I had left everything in Ethereum, it said that I didn't owe anything, because what I really did was I spent 70 grand on Ethereum, and I didn't pull 70 grand back out of it. So they can't really tax me on all that USD that I didn't pull out.
Okay.
So that gives me the ability to kind of say, okay, well, how much do I really want to use, and then leave the rest in Ethereum? Because you know what? If you're leaving it in that crypto, you're still taking the risk that the value of that token could still go down. So that I don't think that aspect of it can be taxed at this point unless they go in and change the laws.
Okay.
Because they view it as a property.
Okay. Now, you're talking about this mobile app. In fact, when I talked to my financial advisor a couple weeks ago, he was talking about this mobile app. What is this mobile app? Is this like a central repository where people can access their accounts and do the actual trading? Or where's this app available? And can you go into a little bit more detail about it, please?
You're talking about the... you're talking about the application that connects up to the exchange to itemize your taxes?
I assume so, because financial advisor was saying about this mobile app they can actually use to access your account to do trades, and you're talking kind of about the same thing. So I was kind of wondering, where's the mobile app available?
The app that I actually use is called TaxBit, and what it does is it connects up to your exchange and it itemizes your trades, and it comes to the determination of, you know what, this is how much you owe, or this is how much you lost, something like that. And you could just go right to it by TaxBit.com is the name of it. They have three different tiers. One's 50, one's 175, and one is $500 per year. And they have different service level offerings on all of those.
Okay, excellent, cool. Now, Rich, now, the income stream from a cryptocurrency, like from a Bitcoin, it's not simply the buying and selling or the buying hold. Are there other multiple streams that a trader or investor can derive?
Yeah.
And can you go to that
place? The other one would be staking. There's several different ways of doing this. It could be either staking or liquidity mining, basically. So for the staking, I don't think you can stake Bitcoin on most exchanges. I don't believe allow you to stake Bitcoin. I know you can't do it with Coinbase, but some of these other altcoins have an easier method to actually stake the cryptocurrency tokens. So what that means is you would take the stakings as, I would picture them as kind of a savings account. But the difference is that, the account is, it's not with a financial institution. It would be basically with the platform. And they have different lock periods. So one token might have a 90-day lock period. One token might have a 30-day lock period. And they all have different rates. And what I like to do to explore those is there's a website called stakingrewards.com. And what that does is that allows you to evaluate different cryptocurrency tokens and evaluate them on the basis of what are the actual staking rewards for holding this particular token. So right now, if you go to stakingrewards.com, you'll see that Cardano is on there at 6.6%. Ethereum 2.0 says it's like around 6%. Solana is somewhere around 6% as well. So those are some of them that can be staked. I think that there's a few more, but the higher you go, you actually end up with tokens that might be a little bit more risk. It looks like PancakeSwap, for example, has a 71% APR reward. I'm not exactly too familiar with that, but I believe PancakeSwap operates a little bit like an exchange. And you've also noticed that, PancakeSwap has actually come up quite a bit in value over the past several years. It would probably be, in my opinion, something that's – it's probably not as safe as Ethereum, but it's safer than some of the other lesser-known tokens on here. And you see that there's several that are in the 50% range. Switchio, like I said, that's right now at 40% APR. So what that means is in 1 year, you'll have a 40% increase on the number of tokens that you have. And the cool thing about this, and I'm not going to say that's specific to Switchio, but that's what attracted me to Switchio to begin with, is you can restake your rewards tokens, and then that enables you to develop a compound interest. So if you wait, let's say, a month, and in that month, you're going to make, you're not going to make a full 40% because that's per year. So it would basically be 40% divided by 12. So you're going to make about 3%. I mean, while that's not a lot, if you have 100,000 tokens, you just made about 3,000 tokens in a month. So then if you restake those, your next month, you're going to be earning on your original amount plus the reward amount, and you're going to earn it based off of that. And that doesn't necessarily mean that your value can't go down, but if you look at the number of tokens and not the value, you know, you could start to realize, like, okay, well, this month I'm making a little bit less because the token fell in price, but you're still making money. You know, in those percentages, you know, 40% APR, that's, you know, that's more than what a credit card company makes off of a person's use of a credit card. So that's actually not too bad.
Okay, excellent. Now, coming on to kind of what my bread and butter is, a lot of people have heard, like, what, you know, cryptojacking, you know, on your computer to mine illegally for these currencies. Can you go into a little bit more detail what cryptojacking is, and what are the other cyber, apart from the financial risks, obviously, what are the other cyber risks that are associated with investing in something like Bitcoin?
Okay, so I mean, basically what this is, cryptojacking, according to the actual definition, I'm looking this up right here. I mean, while I knew what it was, I mean, this is a better definition of it. Cryptojacking is also called malicious crypto mining, and this is right off of Malwarebytes website. Is an emerging online threat that hides on a computer or a mobile device that utilizes the machine's resources to mine cryptocurrency. It's a burgeoning menace that can take over web browsers, compromise all kinds of devices, and it could be even used on desktops, laptops, smartphones, or even servers. I mean, this right here, you know, it's a nuisance. It's like a virus. I mean, this is not really something that is, this type of crime is really not going to, like, do anything bad to you except slow your computer down and make your computer use up a little bit more system resources or another 30 watts of electricity. Depending on what type of video card, it may end up pumping out a little bit more than that. But I don't know. I don't really think that's like – I mean, I wouldn't really look at that and say, oh, this is a drastic problem. You know, as far as, you know, some other things that, you know, could potentially end up more of a problem would be, and, you know, some other risks, like I said, would be that, you know, something that I'm actually familiar with specifically is these ransomware attacks where, you know, sometimes small businesses will call up and say, our entire network has been encrypted and the attackers are demanding a ransomware of 100 Bitcoin to get everything back, or maybe it's 10 Bitcoin. I mean, it varies from one attack to another. And, you know, that's something that it's not specifically a problem, particularly for people that are already invested into crypto. That's primarily a problem for businesses or possibly even individuals that are not following proper cybersecurity hygiene. So that's, you know, that's a little bit different. Now, I mean, in terms of risk associated with using crypto, you know, then you also need to make sure that you're utilizing, you know, proper cybersecurity hygiene, whether you're a business or not, because, you know, the government isn't backing your cryptocurrency exchange. You know, someone can hack your account, even on Coinbase, and I don't think that's even backed by anything. And, you know, that is an ongoing risk, and unfortunately it has happened to a number of people. And, I mean, you could lose everything that you have on the exchange with an attack like that. So, you know what, if you're not trading, it's always best to leave your crypto in an off-exchange wallet, or better yet, a hardware wallet like a Ledger. You know, that's usually the safest way to store your cryptocurrency.
Okay. Now, as we start to wrap up our show here, how do you think the Bitcoin landscape is going to look like for the rest of the year? Are we going to stay the same amount of volatility? Is it going to start tapering off?
Yeah, you know what? That's a very, very difficult question to answer specifically. But here's what I think, though. I think the volatility has always been there throughout most economic conditions, at least on a year-by-year basis. I mean, I think that there, you know, could be some years where, you know, Bitcoin hasn't changed as much in price as in others. But typically, you know, it has remained volatile throughout its, you know, throughout its, you know, throughout the time when it was first released. So, you know, whether or not it continues to maintain that same level of volatility, in my opinion, and there's no way for me to say that this is factual, but I do kind of think that, you know, once we see how, you know, the government is going to ultimately react to crypto, and there's, you know, the regulation that is going to be set is set, and things aren't going to be continuously changed, I think a lot of that volatility will probably disappear. And, you know, Bitcoin may end up having a completely stagnant value with the U.S. dollar, but I mean it may lose a large degree of its volatility. And the other thing with that would be the halving events, because that's usually a deflationary measure that ultimately decreases the number of Bitcoin that are available on the network, and that's almost always going to have a positive impact for the valuation of Bitcoin or whatever crypto is doing that. So, you know, with the U.S. dollar is an inflationary asset because more is always being printed out. And Bitcoin, on the other hand, is a deflationary asset, and Bitcoin is constantly being taken away. So, I mean, those are the variables that you have for, you know, each one. You know what, but what it's going to go up to, very difficult to really decide. You know, my belief is that, you know, we'll start to see, and I'm not going to say any numbers, but I think, you know, within probably the next 10 years, we'll start to see, you know, what it ultimately goes up to before it starts to go down. But my idea within that time frame is we'll also start to see these alts gaining a little bit more traction based on their valuation against Bitcoin.
Okay.
You know, so we may see Ethereum catch up, or Cardano, or XRP possibly. Hard to really say for certain, though.
Can you go over what a virtual trading bot is, like a Bitcoin trading bot?
Oh, yeah. So, you know, any program that utilizes automated trading could be classified as a trading bot. The one that I find to be most useful is Three Commas, which allows you to interact with certain marketplace signals that are defined by different variables, and it follows specific trading algorithms, and it can trade for 24 hours a day. And, you know, based on your, your membership status with them,
Hello.
Oh yeah, yeah. Hello? I'm here. Oh yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
All right. Yeah. Hello? Can you hear me now?
Yeah. Go ahead.
Okay. Yeah. So yeah. I think I might have lost you there for a second.
No, I can hear you now.
Oh, okay. All right. What was the last question again? The valuation of Bitcoin?
What are these trading bots You were talking.
Oh
about
yeah. Oh yes, yes. The one I'm using is actually it's actually done by three commas.
Oh, okay.
So,
okay.
Yeah, I mean, you can set up different trading algorithms. You know, you can set up different things. You know, you could set up different things, or, you know, I mean, you know, one of them would be a grid bot where you buy at specific intervals, and you can set up another bot that you sell at certain intervals. You know, another common one was there's a grid bot, and then there's a DCA bot, which factors in dollar cost averaging, which that's actually done on a few different exchanges. So yeah, so they basically connect up to your exchange and make trades on the basis of several different variables.
Okay, excellent. Now, suppose someone from our audience here is listening to this or will listen to it later, and they want to get started trading the stuff. What's the best way they should get started? I know you're not a financial advisor.
Really
can't make any recommendations per se.
I don't know. I would definitely say, you know, search a few different videos on three commas. You know, there's some tutorials on there that will teach you how to use it. You know what? But if you're also, you know, if you're also, you know, kind of at the you know, you're basically at the mercy of the trading bot to make sure that it doesn't lose money. So you kind of have to have a decent understanding of what the market conditions are, how the market might respond to what's actually going on right now. You know, and I would definitely say, you know, don't risk more than you can afford to lose with those, because it can even, you know, it can turn out pretty bad. You know, if you make the wrong trades. But, I mean, it does have a lot of features on it that, you know, you can do a lot of cool things with that, with Three Commas Trading Bot.
Okay, excellent. Now, Rich, what's the, as you wrap up our show here, what's the best way for someone to get a hold of you if they're interested in talking more about this? And also, in that regard, do you have an e-book or any white paper published on this? That someone can download.
Yeah, I don't have that published on crypto yet. I may do that in the future. You know, right now, you know, I would say, you know, I can be reached by email. Rich@racecs.com is my email, or you could, you know, find the contact button on our business website, and that would be fine.
Okay, excellent. Well, Rich, it's been great talking to you. Thank you so much for your time this afternoon. I learned so much. I'd love to have another podcast with you on this stuff. I mean, it's really fascinating. I just wish someone like me, I'm up all night. I mean, I used to be the type that dial went down and be up all night worrying, but I've become a lot better. But I just wish that there was something a little bit safer to invest in, like there's like a mutual fund or an ETF, or have my advisor do it, because I have no idea. I'm afraid of hitting the wrong button or something and everything will go to zero. So I hope something, I mean, it's interesting. I think Bitcoin, you know, it's another good way of investing as part of asset allocation. I just wish there was something that like an investor like me who's so new to it can trust somebody else to do it for them. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I'm not, like I said, the thing is that the U.S. does have some pretty strict restrictions on, you know, providing financial advice to people. So that's why I have to be careful around that topic. But,
sure.
That's the only one caveat to the whole thing.
Okay, all right. Well, listen, Rich, thanks for your time this afternoon, and we hope to have you again on a future podcast to talk more about stuff that's really, really fascinating.
All right, yeah, thanks. Sounds good, Ben. Nice talking to you.
Take care, bye.
Yeah, all right, bye.